Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Angie Denise Otiniano, and I will be talking about the evaluation of the Datos y Democracia statewide California training initiative, which is a Spanish component that Amy was alluding to in her presentation. Myself, as well, I do not have any relationships to disclose. And this is just a brief overview of my presentation. First of all, I'll start off with the background in that this program was developed essentially with the help of the advisory board, which comprised of representatives of statewide and regional organizations serving both bilingual and only Spanish-speaking populations. And this advisory board really provided guidance on the implementation on this project and was key in addressing the purpose of this project, which was to build the capacity of Spanish-speaking community-based organizations to access and use health data in their program development and advocacy work. And the primary focus of Datos y Democracia was on Spanish-speaking community leaders. And the project aimed to overcome the language barriers by building the data capacity of Spanish-speaking community leaders. Specifically, the goals were to expand the knowledge and capacity of community-based organizations serving Spanish-speaking populations to train key leaders and constituents to perform community needs assessment in underserved communities, as well as to improve organizational and operational capacity for emerging health-focused coalitions, networks, and organizations to use assessment data for their program planning, policy advocacy, and sustainability. Now, what is unique about the Datos y Democracia project is first the development of the Spanish curriculum and training materials, which underwent various revisions and updates. There was a mini pilot course that was conducted with the only Spanish-speaking promotoras from Latino Health Access in Orange County, and additionally, feedback from the San Diego course participants was applied. Additionally, we created a glossary of terms, which was very helpful to clarify what these terms meant. So not only was the definition in Spanish provided, but the English language equivalent was also provided. Now, participants or trainers were required to conduct their workshops in Spanish to only Spanish-speaking community members. So this capacity-building effort would be further diffused into the Spanish-speaking community. Now, in order to evaluate the program, Amy mentioned the various methods that were used. And specific to the self-administered pre and post, as well as follow-up surveys, the evaluation was designed to capture the impact of this capacity building using measures such as participation, workshop completion, satisfaction, capacity, and intentions. Now, as the project was a statewide training, it was implemented in San Diego, Los Angeles, and Fresno, and trainers included bilingual and monolingual or only Spanish-speaking community leaders, many of whom were community health workers or promotoras, as well as program staff. So as you can see in this table, the percentage of trainers who conducted a community workshop varied by their cohort. Now, specific to the San Diego cohort, recruitment for this cohort focused on only Spanish-speaking community volunteers and promotoras. And although this was a very important population to target, we found that these individuals had a lack of organizational support to conduct their community workshops with their program staff or volunteers. Additionally, this cohort had the largest dropout rate with 24 participants that originally began the 3-day course and only 14 that were willing to complete the 3 days. Now, with the LA cohort, we established community partners, which consisted of organizations serving the Los Angeles area and Spanish-speaking communities. Partners were then asked to identify organizations in Los Angeles County that employed and served Spanish-speaking communities and would be interested in supporting one or two staff members to attend the course as well as complete the workshop. And these community partners were provided with outreach materials, as Amy mentioned, such as texts, talking points, and attachments to spread the word. Also, to avoid the misconceptions of the course requirements, all community leaders who applied for the course were emailed a copy of the Memorandum of Understanding and the community workshop plan of the course so that they got a better sense of what the purpose of the course was, as well as how they could go on and train their own program staff and volunteers. Now, the LA course had the highest percentage of trainers that conducted a community workshop, and we found that many participants worked together to carry a workshop. So from the six steps, either they worked together and did a series, maybe three of the six steps, or they all combined to address one step or a couple of the steps, but have various participants attend them. And here in the LA cohort, we saw that 23 of the 27 trainers completed all 3 days. In regards to the Fresno cohort, we employed similar outreach that had been done with the LA cohort and established a strong collaboration with the Latino Issues Forum satellite office in Fresno. And we found that this group was well engaged and eager to share their own experiences as well as stories. And many of the course participants or the trainers felt very comfortable and seemed to open up a lot about the professional and educational challenges they had faced, and oftentimes the atmosphere got very emotional. Now, in regards to evaluating satisfaction, course components, materials, resources, as well as trainers were rated highly, from 4.35 to 4.85 on a Likert type scale, from 0 to 5, where 5 is excellent. Now, this indicates that the quality of the curriculum and training resources were reflected in the end user level as well, as workshops were rated similarly on satisfaction as the courses were. Now, in regards to evaluating, in regards to evaluating capacity, trainers demonstrated increased self-efficacy in all 19 course skills, as Amy mentioned as well in the English course, particularly new skills such as data collection and analysis methods. Also, end users reported correspondingly high self-efficacy in the community assessment skills covered in the workshops, as did the trainers. Now, when we look at these specific core skills, we found that the greatest increases were in identifying appropriate data analysis methods for quantitative and qualitative data, identifying the pros and cons of various data collection measures, developing a community assessment plan, training others on how to plan and conduct a community assessment, tailoring new material to a training audience, and developing goals and objectives to focus a community needs assessment. Now, in regards to intentions, trainers and end users reported intentions to use the course content and materials in their ongoing community work. So by providing capacity building opportunities in Spanish, more community leaders were given access to essential tools to improve their community's health. So overall, our results indicate that the Train the Trader model employed in Datos y Democracia successfully and positively impacted both the community leaders that served as trainers, as well as their program staff and volunteers. So specific to the trainers, they felt that by teaching others, they mastered the course curriculum more deeply than in the course. They had heightened engagement with health data staff and each other, which enabled them to identify ways to use their community assessment skills and training resources to achieve their own organizational goals as well as community work. They also employed many strategies in tailoring their workshops to the interests, needs, and language preferences, as well as context of their workshop audiences. Now, as a result of this, trainers were able to successfully reach a more community-based group of Spanish speakers than could have ever been achieved by health data alone. So now, as far as the lesson learned, number one is the importance of tailoring materials for Spanish language audiences. And we know that word for word or direct translations are not enough, and we really learned the importance of pilot testing and getting feedback on terms, which then helped to develop the glossary, which was really helpful also in maintaining consistency. A lot of times the trainers as well as the end users had been in some shape or form involved in data collection methods, whether they had been aware of it or not. A lot of them had participating in filling out questionnaires, but they never saw it as being a part of their work until they were able to see these exact terminologies. There were many variations for how to say community needs assessment in Spanish, but it was very helpful to have that information there. Number two, we found that every region and course was a different experience, and we try to learn the best practices from region to region to hopefully improve and increase the impact that we would have. Now, one of the key best practices that we learned was to outreach to organizations rather than individuals to ensure that trainers would have organizational support to attend all 3 days of the training as well as conduct their own workshop. Now, this is very important because we know that not every individual has the same level of support to engage in these type of activities, and it's very dependent not only on the organization that they work for, but the type of position that they have. And now this leads to the difference between only Spanish-speaking or monolingual trainers compared to bilingual trainers, which had varying levels of organizational support. Also, we found that convenings were an added benefit to the overall capacity building effort, but they also served as an excellent follow-up method, which encouraged trainers to continue contacting health data staff as well as continue networking among themselves, because a lot of these individuals were working with similar interests, with this passion and this drive to really want to help their community, and they just may not have had the opportunity to network because they may not have had a place to do so or an event or venue that would have enabled that. Now, there were, going on these special considerations, I want to talk a little bit more about these differences between bilingual and monolingual trainers. Now, bilingual participants were more likely to have employer or supervisor support to participate in the course and fulfill its requirements, or to be supervisors themselves. They were also more likely to have higher paid positions and levels of education, and conversely, monolingual trainers were less likely to have that employer support. Now, although course applicant screening and follow-up involves ensuring buy-in by supervisors and employers, it was difficult oftentimes for individuals such as promotoras or volunteers to have the support because they may not work in a traditional office or even be on the payroll. Now, considering the accessibility, it was very important for us to improve the accessibility of the course and convening through transportation and childcare. These were barriers for our trainers and end users, and we often had to consider if public transportation was available and that would enable individuals to be able to participate. Childcare was a little more difficult just because in certain venues that we used, we were not allowed to have, for example, a staff member serve as a childcare provider, and we would have to find another school nearby, but that was a little more difficult because it wasn't on-site childcare, and it gave a little more responsibility to the actual trainers or the end users. Now, as far as improving visibility and accessibility, there were issues with our course participants that weren't local to the LA area. For example, a lot of individuals didn't have long distance, or they may not even have had a direct telephone where we could reach them, so it was difficult, us having a 310 area code, that they weren't always able to call us. So we wanted to make special considerations in the future if it would be good to have a toll-free number or calling cards. And additionally, as Amy had mentioned, we do have everything available online, which is extremely helpful, but a lot of these individuals may or may not have the accessibility to a computer or to internet or to a printer. So oftentimes we had to make special attempts to print out hard copies of materials in order to provide individuals with that. I definitely want to acknowledge the funders as well as all the previous and present staff that have made this program possible, and I have belief that it will continue to address the needs and overcome these barriers specific to this community. And this is a website where all the Spanish information is available.
Thanks, Angie. We now have about 10 minutes for question and answer. Does anyone have any questions? Don't be shy. Over here.
Organize and train
Right. So the good thing is we saw how resourceful individuals are and that they were able to convene people, even having limited resources, that these are promotoras that go door to door to individuals and they're in continuous interaction. So they don't necessarily need a telephone to communicate with the people they were going to train. And, you know, again, if they didn't have a phone line, it was difficult for us to contact them. We were able to contact maybe a neighbor or someone else who would consistently communicate with them. But if they're relying on using somebody else's phone to make a phone call, it's difficult to say, can I use your phone? And it's going to be a long distance call. Whereas, you know, 1-800 number, you could go to a payphone. It's a lot more feasible for them to contact us back.
Thank you, Jen, who is also a Datos y Democracia staff person. We found through mostly anecdotal evidence of longer-term impact of this. And our Datos y Democracia and Data and Democracy course graduates are very involved in health data. They go to all of our trainings. They come to the convenings, even if it isn't the convening for their particular course. They come to later convenings. And in this third phase, which I'm happy to talk to any folks about afterwards, in this third phase of our evaluation, we're actually working with the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C. to measure, to actually more quantitatively document these longer-term impacts of this capacity building on them. Some of the longer-term changes within their roles within their organizations and also within their organizations' roles within the community we feel are revealed only through this longer-term view, which we unfortunately didn't have the ability to do in phase two. Does that answer your question?
Any other questions? Don't be shy. Go ahead.
Address that, Rick Brown, the executive director of the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research. In this longer-term view that we're taking, we're really being creative in measuring these other kinds of impacts. Originally, we had thought that success would be trainers going on to train others, using that training to develop a community assessment planning process, and then going ahead and conducting a community assessment. And in many cases, that was the case. These are some of the longer-term anecdotes that we have. But of course, just familiarity with data and just, you know, sort of the readiness, the stages of change on an individual level, which we've talked about on this panel, are things that we see. I mean, even within the course, the light bulbs that we see go off and, oh, I can make a data table too, or I can read that data table, are really short-term and achievable things that we see every day. So documenting that and getting that out into the literature is really our focus right now, and that is something that we will be capturing better in this phase three evaluation.
Sure. I have a question for the UCLA folks. I'm a chair in a local coalition here in San Diego, and can we contact you for data based on zip codes locally? Because that was something that we were trying to do last year that the coalition was really interested in, of getting kind of tailored reports from the CHIS data?
That's a CHIS question. CHIS data, as Rick, correct me if I'm wrong, is not available on the zip code level except through restricted data access process, just for data confidentiality reasons. I myself do neighborhood effects research, and so getting zip code level data is very difficult. It's also the biggest complaint of the community-based organizations that we work with, which is why we're enabling them and encouraging them to collect their own, you know, community-level data that's much more appropriately capturing a sub-county level. So we can talk afterwards more about some of that data that's available through CHIS on the county level, but also some other resources.
Are there any other questions? In the back?
Yes. I'm from Canada. We work in a community-based group with Latin American Women and American Women Project in some dimension. And I was very interested that you said that there was a difference in terms of basically the organizational support available to your monolingual and bilingual trainers. What strategies did you put in place to support the monolingual trainers, or have you made a decision to not continue working with people who speak only Spanish?
Right. So some of the strategies we employ were, number one is we encourage these monolingual speakers to work together, because then they were able to pull all their resources together. And specifically in Fresno, because we had a partner, which was Latino Issues Forum, they played a key role in enabling this. And although their representative from Latino Issues Forum didn't attend the three-day training, they were present at the convening and were consistently there with the women who were trained, who were promotoras, that didn't necessarily have the support from the organization or the coalition they were working with because they weren't employed, but he would let them use their office. So it was really that encouraging them to work together and then seeing what community partner could potentially advocate for them and provide this additional resources that they needed.
Any other questions? We got about 5 minutes left.
I had a question about the readiness study. We found in organizations or even in neighborhoods that capacity varies according to the issue. How do you navigate when you're assessing readiness, whether it's an issue capacity gap or whether it's an organization capacity gap or whether, because on some things they may be way ahead of the curve and other things they may be just beginning to develop their capacity.
I think you almost just answered your question, that it depends. And I think that a lot of the assessment models, that's what we run into, that sometimes they're very focused on the issue, or maybe sometimes they're a little bit more broad. But, and it depends on, are we talking about a neighborhood, are we talking about a coalition, are we talking about a community group, are we talking about a specific organization and their staff? So it, I guess we're trying to move that conversation forward of when we say, I liken it to 10 years ago, say the word empowerment. Well, what do we mean by empowerment? When we say capacity, what do we mean when we say that? And when we research these topics, then we need to have an overarching framework. So I guess when we get specific or broad, it kind of can fit under that framework. So I guess that's what our goal was.
Can you break down your instrument by issue so that you can track different readinesses?
Yeah.
In different parts of the quad for each issue?
So it's kind of, I guess the user could say, what am I interested in, and then kind of pick from group of assessment models of what would be most appropriate for your needs.
Got a couple minutes left if anyone else has any other questions. No? Okay, great. Well, thank you all so very much for coming. Let's give our wonderful speakers another round of applause. Thank you very much.
I have a unique role here.
Yeah.
This is Santa Ana. We had our express
call.
Are you doing the next session?
Yeah, I need to get into the next one.
All right, let's see how we get out of this one.